After carefully considering the evidence, Boxy confidently concluded that the Jade King was, in fact, an idiot. Once that had been established, the mimic put the matter out of its relatively tiny mind and approached the center of the room. The golden chest containing its prize was already waiting for it, having popped out of the floor just next to the idiot king's throne. Boxy wasn't aware of when or even how it had gotten there, but questioning every weird thing that happened in a dungeon was a waste of time and energy. The gilded treasure chest flung itself open when Boxy approached, exactly like the previous one had. The mimic mustered every bit of its willpower in an attempt to hold itself back from worshipping the sublimely radiant form. It succeeded, barely, and kept itself firmly in check as it beheld the item that had risen from the chest and was currently floating in midair. It was a piece of steel plate armor, a left-handed gauntlet, to be exact. The sleek, polished metal was rather shiny in its own right, though it obviously could not compare to the glorious container underneath. The bulky metal glove would protect the wearer's entire forearm from fingertip to elbow, in addition to the sturdy-looking shield permanently affixed to its outer side. Which was good, since this made the shield much more difficult to disarm, but also bad because of the way it seemed to restrict the movements of the hand and wrist. The usability of the item was practically zero to a creature with no hands, but there was a good chance that it was enchanted gear, which would mean it was fairly expensive. Having already decided to pawn the gauntlet off for profit at the first possible opportunity, Boxy gingerly reached to grab hold of it with a tongue tentacle. Boxy had nearly touched it when the creature hissed sharply, its outstretched appendage recoiling in disgust, and its owner took a few hurried steps back.
"Master, what's wrong?"
Zira asked worriedly.
"The item is nasty,"
it growled in response.
"Huh? Something wrong with the gauntlet?"
The succubus approached the object in question to examine it up close. She was no expert on armor, but she did know a thing or two about magic, and the object practically reeked of it. Her master was significantly more sensitive to ambient mana than she was, so it was hardly a surprise that it had been disturbed by the vile energy the thing exuded. The mimic had noticed that there was clearly something very wrong with the metal glove, but it likely had no idea what that something was.
"Master, I believe this item is cursed,"
Zira declared. Those words put Boxy in a foul mood, as they meant that it had gone through all that trouble for tainted goods. Cursed items were something that it had heard about from a merchant in Erosa, before its cover had been blown wide open. They differed from regular magic items in two major ways. Firstly, while their enchantments were far more powerful, they also carried with them negative, sometimes debilitating effects. Both the good and the bad would often correlate with each other in some twisted or ironic way, like a cursed ring that allowed its wielder to become invisible but also robbed them of their eyesight. Then there was the second, more worrying aspect of cursed items. More often than not, they would permanently bond with their user in addition to any negative side effects. Armor and jewelry would fuse to the wearer's skin and bones, while weapons would come to life and turn on their wielder if they went unused for too long. There were only two ways to rid oneself of cursed equipment: amputate whatever body part the object was attached to, or have a skilled enchanter purify the item. Neither was preferable, as the former could leave one crippled for life, while the latter would result in the destruction of the profane object, or at least greatly diminish its power. There were, of course, those that were willing to bear a curse in exchange for terrible power, but nut jobs like that were in the minority.
"Cursed, you say?"
Valeria called.
"Let me take a look."
The lich floated over to the treasure chest, grabbing the item brazenly. She flipped it around in her hands, although it took a bit of effort. The thing was heavier than it looked.
"Yup, cursed for sure,"
she said after a few seconds.
"This is a pretty strong one, too, based on what I know from Hexcraft." "Huh? Why are you all looking at me like that?"
She had just noticed the demons and the gnome cringing at her, and the lich's face went stiff as realization finally dawned. She looked down at the mimic just in time to see an extra thick tentacle hurtling toward her face. The blow sent her flying into the ceiling, forcing her to drop the magic gauntlet, which fell to the ground with a loud clang.
"Don't touch what's mine!"
Boxy growled. Valeria had laid her hands on the mimic's property without asking permission. Just because the item was cursed and the monster had no intention of even touching it certainly did not mean that it wasn't planning to keep it.
She's so lucky. I should have grabbed it first,
Zira lamented.
Nice swing, boss,
Cora cheered, clearly enjoying Valeria's misfortune.
She really should know better by now,
Fizzy muttered. The mimic managed to calm itself down somewhat once punishment had been administered. At the very least, it had learned that simply touching the thing wasn't going to trigger the curse, so it could safely order the succubus to pick it up. Just because it was safe to touch didn't mean that it wanted to. Zira did as instructed, helping Boxy to stow the gauntlet inside its storage. It would deal with the cursed thing later. In the meantime, there was still the matter of the dungeon core suspended beneath the ceiling. Of course Boxy wanted to take it. Why wouldn't it? If nothing else, grabbing this thing would allow it to power up through the Grand Theft Arcana perk. Speaking of which, the victory message earlier had said something about a new achievement, hadn't it? The mimic had been so preoccupied with the phantasmal treasure chest that it had almost forgotten about it.
Perk list!
Perk list. Arcane Assassin. Monster Magic. Grand Theft Arcana. Butcher of Humanity. Collateral Damage. Hero of Chaos. Rare Golem Dismantler. Jade. After calling up the relevant screen, it focused its mind on the latest entry. Rare Golem Dismantler. Jade. Some people just have a knack for breaking things. Requirements: clear the dungeon known as the Spire of the Jade King. Effects: increases XP gained from defeating golems by 5%. Well, this was interesting. The wording seemed to imply that there were other rare golem dismantler perks. Calling that deduction tasty, however, wouldn't exactly be accurate since Boxy had no intention whatsoever of looking for any more of those rare golems. In fact, it could barely stand the thought of going through all the effort of killing something it couldn't even eat. That said, it wasn't as though the perk was completely useless. The mimic was planning to keep killing the golems around the spire until it reached level 50 mimic, and that 5% bonus would help it reach its goal sooner rather than later. But what of the others?
Fizzy, did you get a new perk?
It asked suddenly.
Yes, I did. Perk list,
she chanted.
Rare Golem Dismantler, right?
Meaning that it was safe to assume that the entire group had been credited for clearing the dungeon, even though Boxy had done all the work. At least at the end. Even so, Fizzy and Nasty would have been the only ones to get the bonus since contracted familiars were incapable of gaining perks. It only suspected that the Lich had gotten it, as she was still dazed from Boxy punting her into the ceiling and didn't seem to be in any condition to discuss her status. The important thing was that the gnome, the mimic, and the lich would most likely all be able to benefit from Grand Theft Arcana. Which was a good thing, as it meant a greater overall increase in their group's combat ability.
Arms! Go shake the shiny ball loose! Sure thing, boss!
The fiend walked briskly towards the edge of the room. Once she reached the wall, she took a running start and leapt into the air, spinning around to deliver a high-impact flying dropkick to the dungeon core. Your attack has been repelled. However, dislodging it was much easier said than done. As with the Lidigard dungeon complex, the crystal sent the force of Cora's attack right back at her, the recoil sending her crashing to the ground. Valeria, who had only just recovered from being lich-slapped, stared at the spectacle with wide eyes.
Darling,
she asked stiffly.
What is it you're trying to do?
I'm taking the shiny, came the monotone answer.
What? The dungeon core?
Yes.
You can do that?
Yeah, you can,
Cora said, having just had another go at the core.
Last time was a lot of fun, you know.
Boxy?
Fizzy raised her voice.
Won't Charlie be mad if you take his dungeon core again?
She remembered that the God of Consequences had mentioned something along those lines during their last face-to-box-to-brick meeting.
Arms! Hold on a minute!
That's right. Pissing off Willy would be a phenomenally bad idea. The god may have been understanding the last time due to the mimic's cataclysmic actions, but that was the past and this was the present.
Master, that is a baseless worry.
Zira shook her head.
I do not think this dungeon belongs to the progenitor. It is much too... orderly.
Oh, you do have a point there,
Fizzy admitted.
I would think a dungeon owned by that guy would have all sorts of monsters in it and would probably be really hard to navigate. If a god does own this place, it's probably Goroth, not Pedro.
What's a Goroth? Is it tasty?
Goroth is the god of the earth,
explained Fizzy.
He watches over artisans, craftsmen, and artists. Actually, yeah, this dungeon is most probably Goroth's work. Legend says he created the first golems by giving life to the beautiful sculptures of his disciples, so what we've seen so far definitely fits.
Ho, you sure know a lot about him,
Zira said suspiciously.
Well, he's highly regarded where I was born. There's no gnome or dwarf alive who doesn't revere him, you know. It's said he rewards those who work earnestly towards mastering their craft with his divine protection.
The gnome's expression turned dark as she stared into the distance.
And yet the god I've been forced to serve is such a—
Watch your mouth, worm!
Fizzy recoiled at Zira's ice-cold voice, bracing herself out of pure reflex. However, it would appear that this was not going to be a physical beatdown, but a verbal one.
You should be thankful my progenitor chose to give an insignificant bug like you some direction in life.
Cora continued to fling herself at the dungeon core as the succubus and the gnome faced off.
Direction? That's what you're calling what he did to me?
Fizzy protested.
Of course. If it wasn't for my master and the progenitor, you would have spent the rest of your days in miserable solitude, clinging to the ghosts of the past. Knowing you, you'd probably enjoy such a sad, boring life.
What makes you think you know anything about me?
I was inside your head. I've rooted around in there so much that by now I know you better than you know yourself.
Well, what's wrong with living a peaceful life?
Fizzy argued.
Ha! You call that living? A boring, day-to-day routine where nothing changes? Fuck, even the lich over there is more alive than you were when we found you.
Hey, don't bring me into this.
Shut it!
They both shouted at Valeria.
I'll have you know,
the succubus continued,
that our progenitor did not act on a whim. He has some sort of plan in mind, because he is a wise and fair being. More so than any of those other so-called gods.
Fair? Fair? Forcing me to be his champion for his own amusement is somehow fair, is it?
But it is,
Zira stated confidently.
It's not like you haven't benefited from it, you know. Do you honestly think that you could have survived this long if you didn't have the paladin job? You would have definitely died from the blight otherwise. And that's assuming you would have even survived your first week in those monster-infested mountains.
You! Okay, I admit you have a point there. But why did it have to be— No, he already answered that. Or rather, I answered it myself, didn't I?
There was no reason it had needed to be her, specifically. She had just happened to be there.
Wait,
Fizzy mumbled.
What if it wasn't me? What if Boxy had dragged someone else along?
The succubus looked down at the gnome, smiling cockily.
I believe you already know the answer to that, champion of chaos.
She did indeed. If someone else had been in Fizzy's place, then Lucius would have treated them in exactly the same way, regardless of who it was. Knowing him, he'd probably have made even a dumb critter like a rabbit or an alley cat into his champion if the mimic had brought one along. It was simply in his nature to do things that defied common sense, but seemed perfectly logical from his perspective. Because the god of unpredictability was neither cruel nor evil, nor was he particularly kind either. He simply was. The only reason Fizzy had a negative view of him was because of the terrible things that had been happening to her recently. But the succubus was correct. The gnome owed her life to the deity. For better or worse, she had been made his champion, and she was alive right now because of it. It hadn't been the random act of whimsy it had first appeared to be, either. She felt strangely confident that it was a calculated move that had served a very specific purpose. In other words, for the first time in her life, the pint-sized paladin felt as though her existence had a meaning, a goal. So what if it was something inane, like serving as entertainment to a bored god? At least she had a purpose and knew what it was, and that acknowledgement alone brought her troubled soul a much-needed measure of peace. It even gave her a strangely optimistic, hopeful feeling, one that suggested that maybe, just maybe, things might work out somehow.
Yeah,
she mumbled after a long, hard think.
I guess this paladin thing might not be so bad after all.
Proficiency level increased. Champion of Chaos is now level 7. Faith +2. Luck +2. She turned her gaze away from the smugly smiling succubus and towards the resident muscle brain, who had fallen on her ass once more.
By the way, exactly why are you hitting that dungeon core over and over again?
'Cause the boss said so,
Cora said simply. The mimic had told Arms to resume her assault on the core, as their earlier conversation had determined that the dungeon did not belong to its benefactor. As for the lich, it seemed that she had nothing better to do than quietly fawn over Boxy.
But I thought we were trying to take it, not break it,
Fizzy argued.
Nah, it'll take a lot more than a few love taps to break one of these babies,
Cora explained, positioning herself for another run-up.
All I'm gonna do is knock it loose.
What, with brute force? I don't mean to disrespect Boxy's, wisdom, but I doubt violence is the answer here.
Of course it is,
the fiend declared.
I just haven't used enough of it yet.
She leapt upwards to deal one more flying kick to the shimmering orb. The last attempt did the trick, and the pale blue ball went flying into the wall of the room. The fiend landed on her feet, struck a triumphant multi-armed pose, and smiled proudly at the dumbstruck gnome.
Ha! See? Works like a charm.
Charms are actually horribly unreliable, you know.
Cora responded to Zira's attempts to curb her enthusiasm by giving her the finger. Well, fingers, technically. 5 of them, to be precise. All wrapped up nicely in a knuckle sandwich. As for Fizzy, she was left staring in stunned silence at the dislodged crystal core.
Well, that just happened,
she admitted after a few moments.
What now?
Now, Boxy butted in, we roll it down the stairs and bring it outside the dungeon as fast as possible.
Is there a reason why we need to rush?
Yes.
The paladin took a deep breath and prepared to ask the next question, despite knowing full well that she would likely regret it.
And what would that reason be?
It might explode and kill us if we don't hurry.
Fizzy had guessed right. She did indeed regret her question. Immensely. Part 8. The mimic's party commenced their escape by pushing the dungeon core down the stairs and following after it. While it was true that Cora could have easily carried it, there didn't seem to be much point when gravity was more than happy to help out. It was also preferable to conserve stamina whenever possible. If past experiences were any indication, the group would most likely be attacked by a legion of golems once they made their way out of the spire. However, it soon became apparent that there was no reason to rush. The dungeon core had done nothing since Cora had knocked it from its magically affixed spot, showing no signs of overloading or raising an alarm. Nor were there any demands that one of them become the new dungeon master. Did its presumably divine owner honestly not care that their property was being stolen right out from under their proverbial nose? Or were they simply not spiteful enough to cause widespread destruction like Billy had? Whatever the case, Boxy certainly wasn't going to complain about the uneventful trip. Even the stone soldiers in the hedge maze left the group alone as they transported the core out of the dungeon. The grace period of reduced hostility meant that they no longer attacked on sight and only fought when provoked. If anything, they seemed to be actively avoiding Boxy's group, though 8 of them did have to be put down since they'd been in the way. That was 10 times less than the number of golems they'd had to battle on the way in. All things said and done, the return trip was very nearly restful. There was no mad dash for the exit, no hordes of monsters on their heels, and no calamitous forces being thrown at them. Instead, their exit was more akin to a peaceful afternoon stroll through the park. It was also incredibly boring, which didn't sit particularly well with Cora since she hadn't quite had her fill of violence for the day. She'd been looking forward to smashing more golems, but even the few enemies they had encountered had been off-limits since she was assigned to core carrier duty. She was frustrated and irritated, which was really her own fault for getting her hopes up.
The first dungeon was a lot more fun,
the fiend grumbled unhappily.
So I take it the core won't suddenly explode and kill us, right?
Fizzy asked, glancing up at the glowing object.
Don't seem like it. It's not getting bigger or flashing or anything, so I think we're in the clear on that.
Oh, thank Bob,
the gnome exclaimed in relief.
I don't think I can outrun a calamity.
That's a shame, Valeria pouted. All that death and destruction sounded incredibly romantic.
I so wanted to witness my darling's glorious fireworks firsthand.
Gonna witness my fist up your ass if you don't knock that shit off already,
the fiend growled.
Really? No, don't tempt me like that. I couldn't bear to cheat on my darling Boxy.
Ugh.
They chatted back and forth as they made their leisurely way out of the hedge maze. They walked for a dozen or so meters until they had crossed the invisible border of the dungeon's territory, causing a series of notifications to pop up. You have left the Spire of the Jade King. Feat of strength performed. All attributes plus 10.
What? Grand Theft Arcana? Plus 10 to all attributes? That's insane! My, what a wonderful gift. Thank you ever so much, darling.
It would appear that Fizzy and Valeria had also gotten the perk and the associated attribute boost, just as Boxy had anticipated. The mimic checked on its familiars, but it didn't seem as though either of them had received anything, which was also expected. Which wasn't to say that they wouldn't benefit from the theft. The sizable boost to Boxy's intelligence attribute meant that it could pour more power into their conjured bodies upon their next summoning. It wasn't as tasty as plus 10 across the board, but it was certainly better than nothing. You are now the owner of Dungeon Core PT-5484-BM. All functions of Dungeon Core PT-5484-BM are currently unavailable. Please establish a dungeon to unlock them. And there was the other set of notifications the mimic had been waiting for, thankfully without the caveat that its newly acquired core was going into meltdown. It seemed that either Willy had decided to allow Boxy to run free with the crystal, or it belonged to someone who was less of a sore loser. Come to think of it, the dungeon core blowing up may have been the exception rather than the rule. It was entirely possible that Boxy had been mistaken, and their easy exit was actually typical of core heists. Though, technically speaking, anyone who would actively look for dungeon cores to steal was already well beyond the boundaries of what could be considered typical. But no matter. The important thing was that the monster was now in possession of its very own dungeon core.
Boxy?
Stammered Fizzy.
What's going on with the spire?
The mimic turned its attention back towards the Black Tower. It had begun to sway back and forth, shaking violently as sizable pieces crumbled from its walls. A few seconds later, it collapsed in on itself like a house of cards. The large obsidian chunks hit the ground hard, kicking up huge clouds of dust and debris. It was no calamity, but nonetheless it was quite the spectacle of destruction.
Huh,
Cora grunted.
How come that thing suddenly fell over on its own?
Could be structural weakness or something. We did mess it up quite a bit on the way down.
Fizzy was referring to the multiple cracks and dents the dungeon core had made as it bounced haphazardly down the stairs. Which was quite odd, considering that it wasn't nearly heavy enough to damage a material that solid. As odd as it seemed, it was almost as though the core was the bane to its own dungeon. The artificer part of her gnomish mind wanted to study the interaction more in depth, but she assumed Boxy would be wholly unwilling to delay their exit just to satisfy her curiosity. Valeria, however, had a much less scientific explanation.
Isn't the spire simply bowing down to my darling's greatness?
No, you airheaded fuckslut!
The lich's inane prattle caused Zira to snap at her, as if something that stupid could possibly be the reason. At least Fizzy's theory made a certain amount of sense, even if it was wrong.
It's because we took that,
she pointed at the core.
The absence of its controlling unit destabilized the spatial distortion keeping the spire in place, causing it to unravel and leading to a cascading failure as the enchanted medium broke apart under the strain of... You guys aren't getting any of this, are you?
Nope,
Cora answered proudly.
The space was warped.
The lich frowned dumbly.
Sorry, Snack. I don't really get that magic stuff.
Fizzy mumbled an apology.
Are mediums tasty?
Boxy inquired curiously. The succubus sighed in exasperation. She had momentarily forgotten she was, in fact, surrounded by idiots. This was why she normally suppressed the urge to show off her knowledge of magical theory. Granted, it wasn't as though she had gone out of her way to study the intricacies of the arcane arts, but one tended to pick up a few things here and there after centuries of throwing mystic flames at people. As none of the others had her experience, she did her best to dumb it down, at least as much as possible.
Look, it's really simple. No core means no mana, no mana means no magic, and no magic means no magic tower.
It was extremely patronizing as far as gross oversimplification went, but it seemed to satisfy the others.
So, are mediums tasty?
All except one.
No, Master. Mediums are not particularly tasty.
Oh.
Boxy rapidly lost interest, instead turning its attention to its newest acquisition, which was still as inert as ever. If it wasn't going to explode, then the mimic needed to discover how it could be used for its own benefit, which was going to be a problem since it had no idea how to establish a dungeon, though it certainly wasn't planning on doing that anytime soon. Settling down within that man's territory just seemed like a terrible idea. On the bright side, getting started was as simple as chanting two words.
Dungeon management!
Dungeon management. Core ID, number PT5484BM. Dormant. Owned by Boxy T. Morningwood. 92% integrity. 9,153 out of 20,000 MP. Minus 1.6 per second. Basic functions. Dungeon expansion. Ready. Item allocation. Not available. Mana collection. Not available. Monster spawner. Not available. Surveillance net. Not available. Advanced features. Guardian assignment. Not available. Nexus access. Not available. Prison management. Not available. Terrain sculpting. Not available. Trap construction. Not available. A list of mostly disabled functions and features filled its consciousness. Many were fairly obvious as to their purpose, while others were decidedly less so. As for the status of the core itself, it appeared to be... damaged? That was unexpected, but made sense in retrospect. The core had been within the blast radius of the spell crystals that had annihilated the Jade King, not to mention the rough manner with which the mimic and its minions had been handling it. Anything would be busted up after so much abuse. And yet, its integrity had only been reduced by 8%. Even if it wasn't as indestructible as Boxy had initially assumed, it would obviously take some serious effort to actually break the thing. Which was a very good thing to know if Boxy wished to repeat the feat. However, the dungeon core was apparently also leaking mana, even though there were no visible cracks in its smooth surface. Whether this was due to damage or because mana collection was currently inactive was impossible to say, but at this rate all of its stored MP would be gone in a matter of hours. While Boxy would have liked to keep the core's charge, it simply wasn't an option, so it dismissed the problem with a simple, "can't be helped," and left it alone for the moment. It moved on to its next item of interest, the cursed shield gauntlet. Now that they were safely outside the dungeon, the mimic wanted to observe what effects the tainted piece of armor actually possessed. Not on itself, of course. While it wasn't certain, there was a good chance that, once equipped, the gauntlet would prove to be irremovable, potentially necessitating more drastic measures than it was willing to undergo. It was far more reasonable to force it on a disposable pawn, and, as luck would have it, Boxy had access to two of those.
Snap!
Yes, Master.
The mimic had been planning to have its pet succubus take the cursed glove for a test run, but paused when a sudden realization struck.
Can curses affect your soul?
The preservation of its familiar's immortal souls was its sole responsibility as a warlock. It had nearly failed once before with the Overlord incident, and it wanted to make absolutely sure that that sort of thing didn't happen again. Failure to do so could result in the termination of its contracts and/or life, outcomes that it naturally wished to avoid if at all possible.
No, Master. A curse is incapable of such a thing, no matter how powerful it is.
Are you sure?
Valeria asked doubtfully.
There are curses said to affect the mind and spirit, in addition to the body.
Ha! Such trifling things have no effect on a demon. Our souls are much more powerful than a regular mortal's. Only magic that stems from the beyond or the gods themselves can ever hope to truly harm us.
While this was mostly true, there was one exception in the form of weapons bearing the Demon Bane curse. They were exceedingly rare, but for all intents and purposes, they were also the only means by which a mortal could ever truly destroy a demon. Boxy's demonology skill had reminded it of this, hence its sudden hesitation. Just because the gauntlet wasn't technically a weapon, it had no way of knowing whether other curses could have similar effects. But apparently, that was not the case here. Boxy opened its storage and spat the cursed object out, trying its best not to touch the disgusting thing.
Snack! Put this on!
Understood, Master.
The succubus didn't even bat an eye as she knelt next to the fallen item. She was used to being the resident test subject, so she'd been expecting this to happen. If anything, she was looking forward to the sure-to-be-deliciously torturous experience. Not to mention that the gauntlet had genuinely piqued her curiosity.
Ugh!
She grunted, hefting it off the ground.
Really is heavier than it looks.
Zira turned it over in her arms, holding it shakily to slide her slender left hand into the much-too-large opening. The enchanted item must have detected the presence of a limb, seeing as how it started changing size. The steel plating let out a grinding noise as it shrank to a tight fit, molding perfectly to the succubus's feminine forearm. Even the shield part was partially transformed, adopting a more elegant shape. This was undoubtedly the result of the well-fitted enchantment, a somewhat generic feature included with most commercially available enchanted equipment. After all, no one would buy an expensive item that didn't fit right. The downside of this convenient effect was that there was a limit as to how much magic something could hold before breaking apart under the strain. Making room for well-fitted meant less capacity for other magical effects, thereby limiting the object's performance. The alternative was to order gear custom-fitted to the individual, then pay to have it enchanted according to their specifications. The resulting equipment would be significantly more useful than the generic stuff available on the market, but the process required a serious amount of time and money.
Hey, Bubble Boobs! You feeling okay?
The reason Cora had asked was because, though it had been several seconds since the gauntlet had tightened around Zira's arm, the succubus still had yet to react.
Yeah, fine. I just expected this to go down differently.
How's your arm?
It's fine, Master. It doesn't hurt or anything.
Are you sure? It's turning all shiny.
Zira raised an eyebrow, glancing down at her gauntleted left arm. The mimic's choice of words could occasionally be confusing, but she realized immediately that this time around it was being entirely literal. Her questioning look became a wide-eyed stare as she watched her blue skin flaking off in palm-sized, paper-thin sheets to reveal shiny metallic plates underneath. Her soft flesh was steadily being replaced by cold, hard steel, like an infection crawling its way up her arm. She was genuinely surprised to see that the transformation had already crept halfway up her bicep without her even noticing. The others watched silently as the metamorphosis claimed the rest of her arm, beginning to spread across her torso at a significantly higher speed. It enveloped her breasts, collarbone, and upper back in mere seconds. Her head, teeth, lips, even her hair and eyes all turned to solid steel in an instant. Her leathery bat wings weren't spared, becoming a collection of steel sheets held together by metal rods. By the time her right arm and waist were fully enveloped, her legs finally buckled under all the extra weight. She fell to the ground with a dull thud, barely able to move as her hips, legs, and ultimately feet became as solid as the rest of her. You have been afflicted by the curse of the Steel Shaper.
So? How is it?
Master, I...
Zira was startled by the sound of her own voice. It sounded oddly tinny, as though she were speaking through a metal tube. Which, now that she thought about what state her throat was in, might have actually been the case.
It wasn't painful or anything,
she continued.
But my body feels so heavy that I can barely even breathe.
Zira put her palms to the ground in an effort to push herself up, then froze, realizing that she could feel neither the dirt under her palms nor the sunlight on her face. Though the thick armor that had replaced her flesh made her much harder to injure, it apparently also removed her sense of touch. And that wasn't the only sensation that was gone, as her nose could no longer pick up anything resembling a scent, not even the faint stench of rot that seemed to follow the lich everywhere. She hurriedly scooped up a bit of dirt and put it in her mouth, only to find that her taste buds were just as numb as the rest of her.
Master!
She cried through the mouthful of dirt.
I can't feel a single thing. It's like my body isn't really there.
Although she'd become accustomed to sensory deprivation in the beyond, this was much worse than that. It was like she was a prisoner in her own body, especially as it had become too heavy for her feeble muscles to move. It was a distressing state of affairs, and she might have seriously started to panic if she had also lost her hearing and eyesight.
Really? Does this hurt?
Boxy moved closer to its newly shiny familiar and struck her in the thigh with a tentacle coated in metal mimicry, making a small, gong-like sound in the process. The impact left a small dent in her new skin, but dealt precisely zero damage.
No, that didn't hurt, Master.
Zira's voice oozed with disappointment.
What about this?
It reformed the appendage into something resembling a spear and thrust it at the demon's steel midsection. Its second attempt was more forceful, allowing the tentacle to just barely pierce her torso. There was some slight damage, and the mimic could see a bit of demon blood oozing from the wound, but Zira remained unfazed.
No, Master.
She shook her head.
So, you feel nothing at all?
I can tell. Something is stuck in my body, but I can't discern its texture, nor its temperature. It is difficult to put into words. I have never experienced such a feeling before.
Zira was having more and more difficulty speaking as the steel's weight began to overwhelm her limited stamina.
Is it a tasty feeling?
I wouldn't say so, Master.
Can you stand?
I don't know. I will try.
The succubus desperately attempted to push herself up from the ground. She struggled immensely, her arms and legs shaking furiously. But she somehow managed to get to her feet, only to fall flat on her butt a second later.
I can't do it,
she panted frantically.
I don't have enough strength to handle this much weight. Even breathing and talking are exhausting.
Her rapid breathing grew shallower as her body was forced to expend more energy than it gained just trying to fill her lungs with air.
I see. Okay, that's enough for now.
Boxy dismissed the succubus, sending her back to the beyond. Her metallic body took longer than it usually did to evaporate, but other than that, it disappeared like it normally did. Left without an owner, the cursed gauntlet shook a few times before returning to its original dimensions with a loud snap. The mimic then resummoned its familiar, who materialized as her usual self with no apparent side effects aside from an unpleasant memory.
Master, I do not believe we can sell that item. Like, at all.
Why not? It makes you tougher and you don't feel pain, so it should be very tasty, right? Just need to be strong enough to handle the weight.
Master, you need to consider the loss of touch, smell, and taste. No person in their right mind would willingly give up those sensations.
Not even if they became super tough in return?
No, they wouldn't.
Zira was utterly confident of this. All living things, be they male or female, enlightened or monster, demon or mortal, lived to seek pleasure above all else, particularly the physical kind. Some might argue that this was a cynical outlook and that people were better than that, but Zira's very existence gave testament to how naive and untrue that sentiment was. Even her master was like that, though its definition of pleasure was a bit skewed.
Would you ever use something that made it impossible to enjoy tasty things?
What? Of course not!
Boxy shouted angrily.
Why would I ever want such a vile thing?
My point exactly, Master. I guarantee that there is no sane mortal out there who would give up a lifetime of tasty things for a pitiful, golem-like existence.
Golem-like, huh? I see. So it's like that.
Put that way, it made a weird kind of sense. The final reward for clearing a dungeon centered around golems was an item that turned the conqueror into one. Even the typically dense mimic was able to grasp that concept. It also understood exactly what Snack was getting at. After all, it also lost feeling with its limbs coated in metal mimicry, but generally didn't consider it a big deal since it was handy during combat and it was a temporary thing. Imagining a situation where its entire body was permanently covered like that was extremely disturbing. Especially since that would also eliminate its sense of taste, which was one of the main things it derived pleasure from. All things considered, Boxy had to begrudgingly agree that nobody in their right mind would want the gauntlet. And if nobody wanted it, then the mimic wouldn't be able to get a good price for it, which meant that selling it would be a waste. And since it hated to waste things, cursed or not, it wanted to at least get some use out of it.
"Arms!" it called. "Try putting that gauntlet on!"
Its already tough frontliner becoming even tougher could only be a good thing, and the fiend's ridiculous strength and endurance would allow her to turn the added weight into an advantage. It would not only be harder to knock her down, but all of her punches would grow more damaging if she put her heavy frame into them. Admittedly, she wouldn't be able to dodge all that well, but she probably wouldn't need to.
"Whatever you say, boss,"
Cora shrugged.
"It'll take a lot of the fun out of fighting if I can't feel someone's blood on my face, though."
She sauntered over to where the gauntlet lay on the ground and was about to bend over to pick it up when she realized that someone else had beaten her to it.
"What the fuck do you think you're doing, Pipsqueak?"
Fizzy had picked up the gauntlet without anyone noticing and was staring at it intently. It was only when she felt the other's eyes upon her that she turned her eyes from the cursed item and towards the mimic.
"Boxy, do you insist on having Cora Lentiprix use this?"
The uncanny steadiness and determination in her voice genuinely surprised the creature. This was the first time since their escape that she had ever gazed unflinchingly at it like she did now. There was no stutter to her words, no meek subservience in her demeanor, and no fear in her eyes.
"Why?"
it asked.
"Because I want this."
Part 9. Fizzy no longer wanted to feel. Such things had brought her nothing but misery ever since she had been imprisoned. It had only gotten worse ever since she'd been raped, to the point where she was sure that she would end her own life someday soon, unless she did something about it. But what could someone like her hope to accomplish? Take revenge on Boxy, the one who had abused and violated her? No, that would have been pointless. Like an avalanche, the mimic had only acted the way it had because a certain someone had set it off. Blaming it would be like getting angry at the clouds for dropping rain on her picnic, to say nothing of the sheer impossibility of actually going against the creature. Plus, she honestly felt that she could start to get along with the monster now that it had started treating her better, if only it hadn't been for one damned thing. Namely, her flesh. The stupid, disgusting, vile sack of meat that seemed determined to mess everything up. Not only was it an inconvenience to Boxy, but she was continually assaulted by sensations she wanted no part of. The only reason her tortured mind kept drifting to thoughts of suicide was because that was the only way she could see to free herself from her damnable prison. But now another answer had appeared, and she had seen its miraculous power with her own two eyes. A way to allow her to regain control over her sorry life. A method of reforging herself into someone different, stronger. And she would take a page out of Boxy's book and greedily latch onto the thing she desired. The thing she needed. And it was that cold determination that had allowed her to stand up to the mimic for what could very well have been the last time.
"Because I want this."
"You're not afraid of the curse?"
She took a deep breath. The fact that Boxy was asking questions instead of denying her immediately meant that she had a chance. And if there was one thing that the God of Chaos dictated, it was that chances existed to be taken.
"Curse? This holds no curse, but my salvation,"
the gnome declared.
"I need this if I'm ever going to find a way to stop life from fucking me up the ass whenever it feels like it. No, I want more than that. I want to grab life by the balls, rip them off, and ram them down its fucking throat!"
Fizzy panted heavily as she finished her outburst. She had surprised herself not only with how forceful her voice had been, but also by how natural it had felt. It was as though she had finally let loose a side of her that had been desperately clawing for a way out. The thought that speaking to her betters in such a manner could earn her a beating did not even occur to her. Funnily enough, it apparently didn't occur to Boxy either. What came from the mimic's throat was not abuse, orders, or derision, but a menacing laugh.
Sha, sha,
Somewhere along the way, it stopped laughing with the imitation Zirahead it typically used to communicate, letting out a deep, guttural guffaw with its actual mouth. And yet the gnome remained unwavering in her determination.
"That's it!" it exclaimed once it had calmed down somewhat. "There's the monster I wanted to see! A thing that chases after what is tasty without holding back!"
That was indeed it. This right here was exactly what it had been talking about when it had told the gnome that it would teach her to fight like a monster, but she hadn't been able to reach that point until now. No matter how much it had pushed her, no matter how much it had abused her, the strangely stubborn creature called Corny Fizzlesprocket had refused to let go of her gnomish sensibilities. Boxy had been able to see it in her body language, in every little movement she made, that tiny bit of hesitation in her subconscious making her movements awkward and stiff. Forcing her to fight so many monsters to the death had helped mitigate it somewhat, but she'd still been lacking, still incomplete. But the current Fizzy had none of those flaws. She stood firmly, unwilling to simply give up and let go of her goals, showing no hesitation whatsoever in the face of the objectively more powerful being that she was addressing. Her body was in a completely relaxed and natural state, ready to spring into action the instant its owner ordered. It was as if she had already prepared herself to fight to the death for the gauntlet, should Boxy deny her. Perhaps the cursed item was the last thing she'd needed to let go of that dreadfully civilized part of her. There was just one small thing that the mimic needed to clarify.
"Okay. You want my shiny glove. What will you give me in return?"
Everything in the world could have a price attached to it, even intangible things like salvation. That was one of the valuable life lessons that it had learned during its time with the Mercenary Guild. Another such nugget of wisdom was that there was much profit to be gained from the misery and desperation of others. That said, Boxy seriously doubted whether Fizzy actually had anything to offer. The greedy mimic had taken everything from her but her life, and even that was only a murderous whim away. It had already decided that it would give her the gauntlet regardless of her answer, but thought it might as well demand some sort of compensation. After all, that was yet another lesson that the old bartender in Erosa had taught the illustrious Mr. Morningwood. Asking was free.
"I offer you my complete loyalty and total obedience,"
the gnome answered resolutely.
"It is the only thing I have left to give."
Now there was something Boxy hadn't considered. While it was true that Fizzy behaved herself and obeyed its orders, that was only because of the fear that Boxy had put into her. Something that it had already determined to be a suboptimal means of control, but the only one it had had at its disposal. After all, Fizzy wasn't a demon to be bound to a contract, nor was she a lich that could be kept in line by threatening her phylactery. There was no actual way to ensure that she would obey Boxy unconditionally, yet she still offered her complete loyalty and total obedience. And the mimic was quite curious to see how she planned to hold up her end of the bargain.
"Okay, let's say I accept. How will you give me such things?"
The tiny paladin went down on one knee before Boxy, gently placing the gauntlet on the ground next to her. She bowed deeply to the monster, lowering her head and body as far as her kneeling position would allow as her tiny fists pressed into the dirt.
"I, Corny Fizzlesprocket, Champion of Chaos and Paladin of the Order of the Gilded Chest, hereby pledge myself into the service of Boxy T. Morningwood, Chosen Hero of the Goddess of Probability."
A soft yellow-green light poured from the gnome as she chanted,
"Your words shall be my law, your wishes shall be my goals, your choices shall be my creed."
Countless motes of light began swirling around her, steadily coalescing into a small swarm.
"I vow to serve you completely in both body and soul, with my God as my witness. Let us teach the world the true meaning of chaos!"
The luminescent particles erupted into the sky, leaving behind a trail of golden light. They exploded with a series of sharp pops, releasing a shower of sparks that came together to spell out a message in the sky.
"I got you, fam!"
The entire group stared up at the glowing sign for a solid 15 seconds before it faded away and Fizzy rose to her feet.
"What was that?"
asked the flabbergasted mimic.
I just made the Pledge of Arms before the Watchful Eye of Salad, the God of Randomness. It's a ceremony. A ritual I learned from the Holy Scripture skill.
The gnome explained.
And it looks like the big guy not only heard me, but also supports it. That means I'll be in line for some divine retribution if I betray or abandon you.
She had decided that the first step towards regaining control of her life was to accept the things that she could not change. She was a paladin aligned with the weirdest deity in existence, and also Boxy's possession. This was her lot in life, and trying to deny either of those things would be pointless. She had therefore decided to stop begrudgingly following the mimic and begin actively supporting it. So what if it had raped her, hurt her, or abused her? She was confident that she could overcome such lingering resentments if she could just let go of her useless body. Which led her to the second step in regaining control of her life, changing the things that she could. And what needed to change most was herself. Her selfish desire to abandon her worthless past and focus on her future had led her to this outcome. A combination of intent, circumstances, and actions had conspired to make this one singular moment in time a reality.
Okay, the mimic said approvingly. You can have the shiny glove.
Thanks, Boxy!
Fizzy smiled genuinely for the first time since her life had gone to shit. She was about to let go of that sorry existence once and for all, so it was only natural that she'd be utterly overjoyed. Without further ado, she thrust her tiny arm into the cursed gauntlet, which groaned and screeched as it shrank down to an even smaller size than it had before. Matching Fizzy's small build should have been well beyond the capabilities of the transformative enchantment it bore, yet something seemed to be driving it to push beyond its limits. It wrapped itself snugly around her hand and forearm, forming a perfect fit. The curse activated in the next instant, spreading rapidly over the gnome's body, much faster than it had with Zira. Unlike the succubus, who had instinctively fought against the intrusion, Fizzy welcomed the affliction with open arms. It overtook her entire being within moments, but at the same time it also did so much more. It enveloped her. It embraced her. It freed her. It became her. You have been afflicted by the curse of the Steel Shaper. Your willingness to embrace the curse has amplified its effect. Something stirred deep within Fizzy. A horrifying gurgle came from her torso, but lasted only a brief moment before transitioning into a drawn-out, metallic groan, like steel scraping against steel. Though nobody knew what was going on, least of all the gnome herself, she took it all with a blissful smile, even though it hurt so much that it felt as though her organs were being stretched inside out. But it would soon be over. These few moments of agony were nothing more than the last, desperate cries her pathetic flesh would make before it was silenced forever. And then, finally, it ended. Your species has become Metal Golem. Steel. Feat of strength performed. You have unlocked a new perk, Divine Beast. Congratulations, you are now a level 1 Metal Golem. Strength plus 3, endurance plus 3, agility plus 2, faith plus 1. Proficiency level increased. Metalopathy is now level 1, intelligence plus 2, wisdom plus 2. When Fizzy next opened her eyes, she no longer felt cold, hungry, or tired. She could feel neither the shoes on her feet nor the wind in her hair, which had become a decorative lump of metal. The former gnome shuddered delightedly at the lack of sensation. Though it had fought to the bitter end, her sinful flesh had nevertheless finally been cast away, like a gangrenous limb that needed to be amputated. A defect to be ironed out. Or at least, that was how it should have been. No bothersome sensations to plague her troubled mind. That had been the goal. So then...
How?
Her tone had become several octaves deeper. She spoke with a heavy groan, as though her voice were being produced by two anvils grinding together. Disturbingly close to that, actually. One would think the newly born golem would be surprised at the drastic change, but she had other, more important things to worry about.
How come it itches?
She screamed. Fizzy clawed at her chest furiously, desperate to get rid of the incredibly bothersome sensation she no longer wanted. Her metal fingers grasped the chainmail shirt that had protected her body and ripped it apart as though it were made of paper. She clawed at her metal skin, but stopped a few moments later when she realized that she no longer felt the urge to do so. Having watched the transformation in total silence, Cora, Valeria, and Zira decided to weigh in.
"Well, it's official. She's finally gone fucking nuts."
"Completely off her rocker." "Indeed. Her tiny mind no longer clings to sanity."
Though seemingly full of pity at first, their voices suddenly turned joyful as they cheered her on.
"That's the spirit! Congrats on finally growing a pair, Pipsqueak!"
The fiend whooped, giving Fizzy a quadruple thumbs up.
"Here, here,"
Zira chimed in smugly.
"You've become a fine monster. I knew Master had made the right decision in sparing your life. One less rival,"
Valeria mumbled to herself.
"I mean, you've made a wise decision this day. I'm sure of it."
The sudden influx of compliments, sincere or otherwise, calmed the panicking golem down somewhat. She steadied her breathing and once again allowed the nothingness to wash over her. A feeling of absolute peace and spiritual bliss welled up in her soul. This was it. This was just how she'd imagined it. This new, unfeeling body wasn't a prison. It was her sanctuary. Her fortress. She realized with a sick sense of delight that she no longer needed to breathe, either. The only reason her small chest continued to move up and down was simply out of habit. That, and she still needed air to pass through her new voice box in order to speak.
Boxy?
She spoke up.
"Do you still have that junk we picked up this morning?"
The mimic snapped out of its inner thoughts, turning its attention back to its newly refurbished servant.
"I do. Why?"
"Would you bring them out, please?"
The mimic opened its maw, and three large wooden crates emerged, landing on the ground between it and the golem with a series of soft thuds. These were Boxy's bargain bins, containers filled to the brim with miscellaneous items that Boxy had little to no use for, random stuff it had collected as time went on. It wasn't as though it had a reason to hang on to all the borderline useless junk, but there was nothing to be gained by throwing it out, either. Other than storage space, that was. But at present it had plenty of that left. It was therefore unsurprising that the random, unshiny loot that the dungeon had given it was all here, which was precisely what Fizzy was after as she started rummaging through the mess. She briefly regretted that she'd never be able to taste that honeyed fruit she'd had her eye on, but found comfort in the knowledge that she'd never have to taste her own blood or mucus either. Besides, preserved food wasn't what she was after. Her goal was the various clothing items that the dungeon had given Boxy, much to its dismay. While part of her recognized that, as a golem, she no longer needed such silly things, she simply didn't feel right without them. The sense of decency she had cultivated over the past 2 decades demanded that she cover her breasts, at the very least. It would also probably be a good idea to change the filthy underwear covering her naughty bits. Wait, did she even still have naughty bits? Upon closer examination, Fizzy confirmed that yes, she did. Come to think of it, the other golems she'd seen today had all been anatomically accurate, so it made sense that her genitals would still be there, even if they were no longer functional. The same went for her nipples, though the breasts they were attached to were quite different. They were rounder, perkier, and noticeably bigger than they had been a few minutes ago. While she hadn't exactly minded her old ones, just looking down at these new puppies filled her with confidence. Her hips, thighs, and butt had also plumped up, making her much more attractive overall. It was the sort of sexy body that, in her honest opinion, deserved to be shown off. With that in mind, she resumed her search for clothes to accentuate her new curves. She couldn't get too crazy, though, as one of Boxy's goals was to infiltrate society without anyone realizing that it was a monster. If Fizzy was to support the mimic fully, then she had to blend in with the civilized world as best she could, which meant that clothing was an absolute must. That said, there really wasn't much to work with in the pile of odds and ends, so she would have to get a bit creative. She found a plain beige tunic that looked as though it would be a perfect fit. That usually meant that it had been made with a human child in mind, but Fizzy was beyond caring about such things. The plain garment was a promising start, but her rigid pigtails and the shield permanently attached to her left arm made it impossible to put on without ripping it to shreds. Deciding that she could make it work anyway, she reached for an old pair of scissors with the intent of making some alterations. And then she felt it again. An itch. Not on her skin, exactly, but in the tool she was now holding. Letting go made the sensation go away, only for it to come back immediately once she put her hands on them again. It was an odd feeling, to say the least, and after staring intently at the scissors for a few moments, she finally understood the cause. They were rusty. Not extremely so, just a few spots here and there along the edges, but that was without a doubt the cause of the uncomfortable sensation. Thinking back on her chainmail, she realized that she had worn it for nearly a month straight with no maintenance whatsoever. Muck, water, and blood had splashed it regularly, so it was only natural that it would be covered in rust. Looking through the bargain bin's contents, Fizzy spotted a heavily corroded pipe of some sort and grabbed hold of it with her other hand. Sure enough, the rusty parts started itching immediately. Or at least, that was how her brain interpreted the bizarre tingle. There was more to it than that, though. The longer she held on to the piece of junk, the more it began to feel like a part of her. Focusing her attention on it, she discovered that she could accurately gauge just how deep the corrosion had spread. Not only that, but she felt like she could determine the metal from which the thing had been made just by holding it. It was iron, as expected, but inlaid with a thin coat of silver. Proficiency level increased. Metallopathy is now level 2. Intelligence plus 2. Wisdom plus 2. Fizzy slapped her forehead as the realization struck. Of course, her transformation into a metal golem came with a new job, a new skill, and a new perk. She really should have confirmed what those did before getting sidetracked. Well, better late than never. Metallopathy. All golems share a unique link with compatible materials. Requirements: metal golem variant. Type: passive. Range: touch. Effects: allows the exchange of sensory data with any metal object through skin contact. Increases the variety and amount of sensory input that can be processed with every level of this skill. So that's what this was. The sensations were the feelings of the metal rod in her hand. Actually, wouldn't this be extremely useful to an artificer like her? Wait. Hold on. Would she even be capable of handling that job anymore? That aspect of her life was something that had completely slipped her mind. Fizzy let go of the objects she was holding and carefully inspected her open-palmed hands and fingers. And the longer she stared, the more hopeful she felt. No matter how good an artificer was, no matter how much dexterity or experience they had, it was an inevitable fact of life that their hands would shake ever so slightly. It was intrinsic to all living beings. The act of breathing and the pulsing of the heart both meant that a living body could never be completely still. Those tiny involuntary movements were one of the main causes of defects in an artisan or artist's work, the one thing that made perfection so agonizingly hard to achieve. Unless one happened to be a golem. Fizzy's limbs may have been heavier than ever, but they were completely and utterly still. Even statues would be jealous if they saw how magnificently her polished digits remained in place without moving a single millimeter out of position. Emboldened by her newfound advantage, Fizzy wiggled her fingers and wrists around in the motions that she had performed thousands, if not tens of thousands of times before. The movements had been so deeply ingrained into her throughout her life as an artificer that she could have done them in her sleep. Unfortunately, her new hands were too bulky and clumsy. She was unused to the new strength and weight of her limbs, and her joints felt stiff and unresponsive. Not by much, but enough to potentially ruin an electrical circuit or trigger wire. She didn't lose heart, though, if she even still had one of those. After all, those stone soldiers had looked every bit as clumsy as she did, but they'd moved with a grace one would never expect from a living statue. And stone was inferior to steel, so there would surely be some skill or another that could give her the sort of precise motor control she needed. Combined with her new stability and this metallopathy thing, this could pave the way towards her becoming the greatest artificer alive. Perhaps even the greatest artificer who had ever lived. That ever would live. Fizzy tightened her fists with newfound determination. The curse had given her so much more than she could ever have dreamed. It was well beyond a blessing in disguise at this point. Speaking of blessings, there was also the matter of the perk that she'd gained. Divine Beast, a title formerly given to creatures that have sworn themselves in service to the gods. Requirements: Become a paladin, priest, or monk as a non-enlightened species. Effects. Gain an additional +1 faith every time a monster job increases in level. So, she was a divine beast of chaos, was she? She liked the sound of that. The order of acquisition was a bit out of whack, but she couldn't really care about that. All that mattered was that she had it, and it was a very good thing that she did. Even if it wasn't much, the faith she would gain from this trait would be of great use to a paladin like her, especially if she were ever to go head-to-head against a certain undead whore. To put it in simpler terms, the perk was quite tasty. Having finished her introspection, Fizzy turned her attention back to the junk piles.
"Hey, Boxy!"
she called out.
"I can use anything in this crate, right?"
The mimic was fairly certain that there was nothing of actual value in there, so if the gnome... Wait, was she even still one of those?
"Fizzy, are you still a gnome?"
"Not anymore,"
she declared triumphantly.
"I am now a full-bodied steel golem."
"Ah, I see."
"So, I can have some of this stuff or what?"
"Oh, sure, I don't mind."
Frankly speaking, if Fizzy could make any use of that trash, then she was welcome to it. Not to mention that she needed her own equipment if she was going to be a proper minion and not just an unwilling battle slave. Provided that it didn't cost too much, of course.
"Sweet, thanks."
The golem resumed her dumpster diving with gusto, leaving Boxy to try and piece together just what was going on. It would consult with Fizzy later to get the details on her new body, but right now it was far more concerned with something else. The mimic had gotten a certain notification the instant the formerly squishy thing had become significantly less squishy. A notification with some rather interesting implications. The flows of chaos have returned to their default causal state. Based on the message, it would appear that the Agent of Chaos skill had finally run its course. In other words, its effects had been active this whole time, ever since the gnome had been raped, which would indicate that that event had served as the trigger for this mind-boggling outcome. A curse transforming a gnome into a literal monster? Even Boxy's warped common sense thought that was perhaps a wee bit extreme. It now understood why Charlie had wanted a hero. It was because the Agent of Chaos skill would make the otherwise impossible into a reality, or at least a possibility. Which was precisely the sort of thing that the God of Unfortunate Circumstances loved. That said, there was no guarantee that the outcome of the divine ability would be beneficial to its holder. Boxy's last conversation with Jeremy had made it abundantly clear that the bored deity cared only for unlikely events, regardless of what that actually meant for his hero. Sure, this time around, the mimic had gained a more capable minion, but there was no telling what would happen next time. Unpredictable as it was, Agent of Chaos could potentially result in a catastrophic chain of events that would reduce its wielder to a smoldering corpse. Or it could potentially shower it with so many tasty and shiny things that Boxy wouldn't even be able to hold them all. It all hinged on factors entirely beyond the mimic's perception or ability to control, which was how Walter seemed to define the concept of luck, which wasn't particularly reassuring, as far as Boxy was concerned. If it had learned anything from the chaotic disposition skill, it was that Lady Luck was a shameless slut that swung both ways. Though perhaps not in so many words.
"All done,"
Fizzy declared, posing before Boxy in her new outfit. The only thing that remained of the ex-gnome's former garments were her boots with the iron plates protecting the toes. She now wore a pair of baggy brown work pants that were a few sizes too big for her, so she'd wrapped a bandage-like cloth around her ankles to prevent them from flapping around too much. She'd secured them around her waist with an old belt, which rested low on her hips in a slightly askew manner that made it seem like it would slide right off if her new rear wasn't in the way. It also put into question whether she was wearing any underwear underneath. The answer to which would be a firm no. As if a golem needed such filthy things. Her upper body was clad in that plain beige tunic, though she'd had to roughly cut away a lot of the garment's left side in order to make it fit over her rigid hair and unremovable shield. This left the entire area around her left shoulder, collarbone, and armpit exposed, but it did the job of covering her breasts. Well, mostly at least. The fabric was also thick enough to mask the two points of her perky domes, at least so long as Fizzy didn't put any strain on it. It was also a bit on the short side, as it left the plating around her belly button quite visible. The Fizzy of right now looked completely different to the one from half an hour ago. The shiny steel skin, metal hair, and slightly provocative clothing were change enough, but her transformation went beyond simple appearance. The biggest difference was in her attitude. Her meek, subservient smile had become a wide, toothy grin, and the soft, frightened rabbit look in her eyes had been permanently replaced by the manic glare she had shown only once or twice. Though Boxy certainly wasn't a people person, it did know about monsters, and the gnome-shaped golem in front of it was without a doubt one of them. Not a tortured creature desperately trying to stay alive in a harsh world, but a vicious predator that wouldn't hesitate to rip the throat out of anything or anyone that stood in its way. At least, that was the impression the new Fizzy left on Boxy's instincts. The mimic was honestly relieved that she had made her oath, as she certainly wasn't an opponent it would wish to face in combat.
"So, what do you think?"
she asked expectantly.
"You look good. Strong and tough. Could be shinier, but a good start."
"Ha! Just wait till I get me one of those rank-ups. I'll totally blow your mind. Now, where did I leave? Oh, there it is."
The golem strutted over to where she'd left her wrench and picked it up one-handed, resting it against